Hello and welcome to this special episode of Mission Makers, brought to you from Davos, Switzerland, during the World Economic Forum, where me and my team were really lucky to be on the ground curating some amazing spaces and discussions this year, from the future of mobility with the astronaut Nicole Stott, who has spent over 100 days in space, to curating workshops around neuroscience and primal movement at the House of Balance, where I exclusively premiered my music track Infinite Being that features Deepak Chopra. I'll be interviewing key visionaries and thought leaders from these communities, such as the Female Quotient, 100 Women at Davos, Finnish Flow, and many more over the next few weeks to share the best of our collaborative insights on implementing solutions while digging deep into our collective consciousness to take responsibility for the protection and preservation of this world. So today I'm super excited to be joined by some of the founding team behind House of Balance, which is an amazing nonprofit that's been dubbed the Burning Man of Davos because of the way that everything is anchored around community and traded on values instead of money. And this is no easy feat when you consider the extremely high ticket price for Davos. So to be able to take money out of that equation is truly a remarkable feat. It's a space started by locals that hosts experiential workshops and interactive dialogues to create real-time collaboration, turning intention into actions. And its core mission is to imagine, create, accelerate, fund, and scale a transition to a more heart-centered, sustainable, and inclusive future. And this year, some of you may know, I premiered my tracks featuring Deepak Chopra exclusively at the House of Balance with resonance workshops. And since then, I've been honored to accept an invitation to become a core part of the team. So definitely watch this space. But I've spent the last 3 years living between Davos, and I've had the privilege of watching this mission grow since its inception, when it was started by my dear friend and local legend, Hans Martin. In Davos, Hans's family invented the ski boot, and he has since innovated heavily in the field, developing technologies for the most successful ski boots of all time to be sold, and unsurprisingly supplying too many Olympic ski athletes to count with his boots. He started the House of Balance to bring more existential leadership into business and to connect the local community to the conversations happening in Davos. And so today we're joined by two wonderful core members from Hans's vision. First up is Tiffany Hansson-Gram, who is the co-founder of House of Balance. She's a highly sought-after leader in the family office space and is an expert in managing impact investing-focused communities. And she's taken House of Balance to the next level. And joining her is Dr. Victor Pineda, a human rights expert, scholar, investor, and philanthropist. His work focuses on inclusive and accessible smart cities. Victor is a two-time presidential appointee on the US Access Board. He is a senior fellow at the Mohammed bin Rashid School of Government in Dubai, and he is the chairman of the Victor Pineda Foundation /World Enabled. Dr. Pineda's research and humanitarian work advances urban resilience, inclusion, and sustainability both at home and abroad. So it's a mammoth episode, so let's dive straight in. Tiffany and Victor, thank you so much for joining me today. It's so awesome to see you guys again, albeit virtually on the screen. We were just saying, hope we've all had a little bit of time to recharge before Davos, but how are you both doing today?
Tiff?
Yeah, beautifully. So I'm visiting San Francisco for the first time in about 25 years and rediscovering the beautiful landscapes and nature preservation that's been accomplished here. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
Wow.
And I get to treat one of the most incredible humans to a set of experiences that sort of extend this feeling of belonging and purpose and connection that we curated at Davos and bring it into sort of other parts of the world. So we're taking a House of Balance with us.
Amazing. Yeah, it's a traveling energy field, we should say. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, House of Balance. I mean, obviously Hans Martin and Tiffany, you guys kind of came together to create this space. So tell our audience, you know, what was the reason behind this and what kind of some of the core values are. And I personally find it, you know, really interesting the way that the value exchange has been designed. But would love to hear from you guys about that.
Yeah. So the inception point of House of Balance came out of a conversation that I had with my friend Francois, who was dismayed at the state of the masculine and feminine conversation, or between men and women, following Me Too and this kind of antagonistic attitude that had been brewing, putting us in competition. And so we had this conversation about how can we have conversations where we're working in symbiosis to uplift one another and also to reclaim the feminine and masculine aspects within ourselves. So he had the idea to contact Hans Martin to see if Hans Martin would be willing to host us in his space in Davos. And of course, Hans Martin, who has an incredible amount of respect in the Davos community, has a family history there, his grandfather having invented the ski boots, was welcoming us with open arms and helped to produce this tiny event between friends where we had a series of conversations where we were reclaiming the masculine feminine balance within our own lives and within the societal conversation, specifically by valuing the feminine and putting more feminine aspects of ourselves, such as communication and collaboration and inclusivity, into the business conversation. And it had such a resonance that people sought us out for the next year. And we had a wonderful connection with the mayor of Davos and with Valerie as well, the adjoint mayor. So Philip and Valerie were huge components in allowing us to grow and expand the conversation into many more conversations of symbiosis and collaboration and connection. And so this year we had four venues. We had over 1,000 registrants, and we worked with a series of volunteers, collaborators, very experienced and skilled people from all over the world that came together to build this house.
It's beautiful. Victor, do you want to add anything to that?
I mean, Tiffany is both the mastermind and the creator of so many experiences. And I had the pleasure of having that experience in Davos during sort of this early free sort of test of what does it look like when you bring people together to create authentic conversations and experiences. And I, you know, I've spoken all over the world. I've negotiated the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. I'm a two-time presidential appointee and have had a lot of positions of leadership, both in government and nonprofit space in academia. I'm also a professor of urban planning. So speaking has been something that I've done quite a lot. And Davos is obviously a place where a lot of these conversations can be converted quickly into action. That's, you know, it's in Davos where the global agreement for reducing the price of AIDS medications and vaccines, like really important global decisions, the end of apartheid, the end of the Berlin Wall. There's been people that have taken action based on the thoughts and conversations and connections that were made. So I get a call from a mutual friend, you know, her creator from Hatch, that, you know, this agenda was fully booked, but there's possibility to squeeze in one more speaker. And I drive, you know, 12 hours on a whim to figure out what this House of Balance was in May of 2022. And the energy was so beautiful that I could relax my mind and just start speaking from the heart. And I wove together thoughts and feelings and ideas and passions and commitments and stories about not only having to retrofit the world, but before we retrofit the world and solve the world's problems, we need to retrofit our minds and we need to open up our hearts. We need to be able to allow new experiences to blossom. So I was so convinced after this trajectory of global impact and leadership that I've been on that this was definitely a space that was greatly needed, that I stepped in to help sort of produce and co-create this next generation and find the partnerships and the resources to help make it a bigger platform.
Yeah, and we were saying earlier, like, you can feel there's an energy field around that space and inside that space the minute that you walk in. And yes, as Hans Martin was sharing about how, you know, on the other side of the river there's something there. And so, you know, you guys have kind of excitingly expanded in a short space of time. A, because WEF was in May last year, and then of course we were in January, and in May it was in Hans's shop, and now it's as you say, more than 1,000 people coming through. So what has been some of the impact that you've seen, and what have been some of the challenges around kind of preserving the values and the authenticity of that community?
So in building the House of Balance, I can speak from my personal experience, having been an event coordinator and producer for family office conferences and kind of more investment-based events. This was a very different animal. We built this as a community, as a collaborative. We built it as a non-commercial entity. So the sponsorships that were coming through were really more of people supporting and joining the membership collaborative and co-creating with us, but along the lines of our values, which we had our core team go into meditation and come to a coherence level, which is one of our main values, is coherence on what we stood for, which is love and joy and collaboration and coherence. But the primary value is love, and that's what is our engine, our energetic focus. So in the past, I think a word like love would have been a little too airy-fairy or fluffy for a WEF side event. But this year it was met with such longing, such desire and need for the connection that we wanted to create. And because of that, people were coming to the house and sometimes leaving in tears and in hugs because they didn't want to leave. We had many people changing their flights because they wanted to stay longer and spend time with us. Many people commented about the feeling in the space and how they belonged and how they had found their tribe or their family, a place where they felt that all of them could come into the room, not just their professional hat. Mm-hmm. So in creating a space like that, what happened is the heart connection was so strong between people that it built a trust, it built a desire for more connectivity. And from that, when you have the love and shared vision and trust, the projects just flow. There's no brakes on as to what you can co-create together.
The resources are abundant because the obstacles to creation go way down. So when you have a place of trust, you don't need to create all of these layers of additional safety and risk assessments, but rather you understand that there's a shared understanding on how to execute that vision or that impact or that project. And we've already seen people create immediate clusters of working groups, like at education, at research, at impact, at investments. So I think the impact that we've had is to show a model in a world that has these polycrises. Instead of retreating into fear, you step into understanding, awareness, compassion, and love. And I think that is not airy-fairy, because you're not necessarily going to find that as a total package. You might find that as an opening of a door, but you have to choose to walk through it. Right, just because you come to a place with brilliant, impactful professionals, you know, you could leave that place and just say, oh, that was a nice event I went to. And that's fine, right? Mm-hmm. Or you could leave that place and have a realization and a commitment to taking action. And in a world that is filled with so many obstacles and so much fear, what we need is people to have the courage to take action and to be unafraid and to try something new and to build the systems that is the future, that takes us to the future we need.
I think to your point, Victor, one of the main differences that I saw in the way that business is conducted is that usually at a big conference or an event like WEF, everyone is coming with their professional face on, where they're going to give you the shiniest, most exciting picture of themselves and what they're going to convince you to do with them, what they need, what they want. And when you start from a place of authenticity where vulnerability and honesty are accepted and are okay, you have people coming to the business conversation with, this is what I would really love to build. This is what I'm struggling with. These are the cards that I have on my hand. This is where I need your help. What can we do together? That's an honest conversation. That's a platform on which you can build something solid rather than two people trying to convince each other of something that isn't solid, something that isn't clear, maybe even to themselves. So when you allow for real conversation and when you allow for people to show up fully with each other, that does build trust, but that also builds coherence. I'm going to use it again, where you have something real and you can build on it immediately. You don't have to do 5 follow-up calls to check the legitimacy of the offer.
Definitely. And that's why I think a lot of people really valued the format of the way that things were, because there's definitely a lot of, you know, some of the world's most intelligent people out there, and there's a lot that people have to say, but it's in such a short space of time. You know, it's I think people want to get that value of like, what is the collaborative aspect? Because we can all pitch to each other until the crows come home, but really it's about where is that? I mean, everyone says the same thing. We're frustrated with how the world is. You know, that every year it's a morbid picture, but then what actually happens amongst the people, that some of the people that are there and hold the keys to making it a different reality. Definitely. And so talking about this, what do you think is some of the biggest misconceptions around Davos?
I think that there's a lot of opportunity for people to step out of their, you know, masks and suits and corporatized identity. And there's an opportunity at Davos to look at the real history of Davos. Davos isn't an event. It's a community. It's a small town. You know, it's a place that people sought refuge and healing. People that had disabilities, that had tuberculosis, that had pulmonary challenges, would seek out this valley between these mountains in order to find this pure air and to have this sort of space to encounter nature and encounter themselves and find their own nature, a healing nature. So I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that this is, you know, just a party for the global elite. It's not just a party for the global elite. It is people that want to change the state of the world. It's people that are changing the state of the world. The important question is, what will be that vibrational frequency that defines the values? And what are the values that define the actions? And what are the actions that create the outcomes, right? So it all goes back to that sense of feeling trust and safe, and that you have the possibility to actually have a voice and be seen and be heard, not only from your ego perspective, but, you know, we had a woman that was working on rehabilitation at the Ministry of Health in Kenya, who was very passionate about assistive technology and getting tools to children in need. And she paid her own way. She never left Africa on a trip like this, and was a member of the House of Balance, can encounter challenges, right? Her visa was delayed. She showed up late. The housing was lost because she showed up a day late.
Mm.
And the community came together and was able to support her and lift her up. She wasn't stuck as an impersonal object in a machine that didn't care about her. She was a human being that entered a space that allowed her to reconstitute spare resources and spare opportunities for her well-being and help her evolve and change her life, not only with that experience, but going back home. And we saw that in Amsterdam too, where the chief of innovation, Sasha Stolp, in the engineering department said, we will only have our next planning meetings with our shoes off and no table in the middle of the room. So they now, as soon as they left the House of Balance, Sasha had sent us a photo of all of her colleagues, academics and engineers, sitting in a room without a table with their shoes off and their socks, really grounded the conversations that they're having with each other. You got a big smile on your face.
It's just taking me back to the many beautiful stories that we had of people finding their place within the house. And I think you're right in that the biggest misconception is that it is, you know, the evil Illuminati empire of people making decisions from the top down and being hyper exclusive. And what my experience of Davos and WEF Week has been is that there's everyone coming from all different walks of life trying to connect with people that share the same goals and dreams and can help accelerate them. There's a large spirit of collaboration in the town as a whole. But I found that even though I haven't been to Burning Man, the same kind of experiences that would happen in Burning Man were those that would happen with us at the house, which was all of your needs will be met. All of the things that you're searching for will be found. It's just, if you come with an intention and maybe to ease your journey, a Sherpa, I mean, we're happy to Sherpa you in, but there is this collective synchronicity, this invitation to the cosmic internet, as Hans Martin would say, where you just tap into the collective intelligence, collective resources.
You find the collective password. Mind.
Yeah, you get the password
to the cosmic
onto internet. the cosmic internet, and you tap in, and everything that you need is there. And that was one of my greatest lessons this year, was when we share with the group, you know, what our desires are, there's inevitably, and usually within just a few minutes, somebody there to meet that need.
And the hive mind comes alive. Mm-hmm. And you see that on Facebook where you post something and then people give you all of these responses. So I think we're in a network society that needs to be based on values and meaning and purpose, and not just on doing, not on being, right? And I think that's what I found. Now, I'm a member of the World Economic Forum. So this, for me, this isn't just a side event. This is actually almost an obligation or a duty to sort of this bigger process of improving the state of the world. Like, as a council member, we're all working with some of the world's greatest, you know, minds at and some of the world's most influential people to look at how we can unlock human potential, right? So I think it's important to understand that the 30,000 people that come to Davos, there's a lot of barriers to coming to Davos. And there have been a lot of barriers, for example, with other sort of pilgrimages or Burning Man. But I'm not saying that everything is a spiritual experience, but if you choose to add meaning to that experience, if you choose to step into that discovery and revelation, if you listen to this podcast and get curious about how you could be of service to a community that's improving the state of the world, whether that's joining an official channel of the World Economic Forum, or whether it's coming to our more open, non-commercial, non-partisan, non-political, independently organized space, you have a choice in terms of what meaning you will assign to the actions that you take with your life. And if those are based on mutual understanding, love, acceptance, and trust, you will see the world respond to you with mutual understanding, love, acceptance, and trust.
Beautifully said.
The path will be made clear.
Definitely, definitely. One of my favorite quotes is, what you seek is seeking you. And, you know, sometimes you really have to kind of, it can't just fall on your lap, right? You also got to take the steps. And so I would love to ask you, because, you know, I think that part of the equation is accountability, right? Because, you know, we live in a very fast-paced, fast transactional world. It's easy to forget about the impact that an action may have had on someone. And obviously we know the field that we're in out there, and some of the misconceptions that you've touched upon. Have you been in a situation where there's been resistance to this frequency that you're trying to bring or are bringing? And how have you approached that situation?
Do you want to start?
I'll just start by saying that rethinking our culture and the way that we choose to interact with one another, the way that we choose to build things, has been kind of an upstream climb for me, because explaining to people that we are building as a collaborative community, as a non-commercial entity, is very difficult in a place that expects to be able to purchase you. For lack of a better term, they expect to be able to offer you money and have a space where they can pitch their products and sell their stuff, which is not bad. There's nothing inherently wrong about that. But having the thought around our community comes first, our people come first, our values come first, it's planet over profit, essentially, but also it's resonance over expedience or money or ease, really. So we did a lot to protect the culture of the community. We turned many people down that would have come and offered us money for a spot because they weren't in the same mindset. They weren't working as a collaborative with us in building a resonance in a community. They just wanted to sell their services. That's fine, but that's not us. And getting people to wrap their head around what it is to build in collaboration and community was a very difficult one, because our mind just automatically goes back to, well, I want to sponsor, or I want to speak, or I want to have a panel, or I want my 5 minutes in the spotlight, and I want my photo op, and I want, you know, whatever it is, for my marketing materials, which we got, but But that wasn't the focus. That wasn't the point. Nobody was on stage speaking. Nobody was on a panel in that way. We were always on the ground together in a circle. That's how we operate. And the connectivity that you get with that kind of an operation is far deeper, far more valuable than your 5-minute soundbite that you're going to get to an audience who's been hearing soundbites all day.
Exactly.
It's a signal in the noise.
Mm.
Right? There's the noise where it's all the chatter. There's a signal, which is really the pure entity there. And that allows you to take action. The noise is confusion. The signal is the message.
Definitely. You have to find a way to cut through the white noise, 100%. And so what have been some of your life lessons from Davos?
Really good question. Oh, my goodness. It's such an intense week over there that it's hard to pinpoint one. But when we're talking about frequency and resonance, it seems theoretical until you see it in action and see the ripple effects. So when we were putting together the values and the frequency and the culture, it's all kind of something in the sky. It's something immaterial. It's just a feeling. It's a sensation. Until you put it into action and see what comes of it. And what happened was a tsunami effect. Our intention, whether it was just setting the resonance field before everyone got there, having the team meeting, having our hearts united around these values, taking the time to have a quiet spot together where we would just connect with our hearts every morning, starting with a mindfulness practice. Setting that was invaluable, and probably the most valuable asset that we had was our resonance, which is intangible, immaterial, but it's no longer intangible for me. It became hugely tangible. As you said, when people would walk in, they would notice immediately to the point where they were telling us, regularly offering to us the feedback that they felt so good in the house, they didn't want to leave. So I think making the intangible important, valuable, giving it a place, giving it a voice, and noticing the value of that, as you said, you know, tracking the metrics and tracking the impact. Yes, we want to do that on a long-term basis. What outcomes came from these collaborations? What impact came from these collaborations? But also, what impact happened in the hearts and minds of the people that came in and left? What changes were made there?
And it isn't, like you said before, it isn't for everyone, right? We can create a space where people can walk into. But again, it's for them to find the alignment, because if they're trying desperately to sell a product and service, they're not going to get on that desperation. They're not going to find the push in the space, where the space is much more about the authentic, open. So I did encounter resistance by people that did not understand why I would be engaged with this project. And I said, well, I've got a very clear, you know, set of missions that I'm trying to do in the world, which is to advance radical inclusion. Here's a place where radical inclusion isn't like just a set of guidelines or regulations or legal mandates, but actually, as Tiffany was just saying, it is a set of values that self-organize experiences that advance radical inclusion. So it is a way to create, just as you said, make the intangible tangible, right? So that it wasn't just felt. If you looked at the audience, it was one of the most diverse audiences and gatherings, you know, that we've had, with local community members, younger people and older people, and laughter, and and just simple moments of being. So if you don't understand that, if you feel like that is not advancing your goals, you're welcome to leave. But for those that in a world that's filled with fear, in a world that has these polycrises, you can catch a breath and find a refuge with other incredible humans that are also catching a breath, finding a refuge. You might be able to create a synergy or a symphony, if you will, of different music or a path towards your own sort of impact and unfolding. So a lot of these are abstract ideas, but ultimately I did have to push against a few people that didn't understand why this was people could simplify it as a hippie side event, but it's not. It's actually directly leading to business outcomes. It's directly leading to life goals. It's directly leading to personal and professional development. And that, I think, is what we'll notice as we take House of Balance global. Mm. And we look at COP28 in Dubai, where we're having to solve massive extinction of species and massive, climate refugee crisis, massive retrofitting of urban infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, and agricultural challenges. If we can't show up, if we only show up with technical tools to COP28, we won't be able to really create the courage needed to let go of the past. We'll still be holding on to it. But if you enter the House of Balance at COP28 and you feel protected or you feel held or you feel encouraged or you feel inspired, you can let go of everything else that you were so desperately holding on to and embrace the unknown and build that unknown, build that solution. So I think Tiffany and I are very committed to exploring what the growth of this community looks like, of House of Balance. And if any of your listeners have, space for us at a global event or want to connect with us and bring these values into your gathering, we can bring some of the world's greatest leaders on a variety of different topics to sort of augment that experience for your participants so that they leave not attending another conference, but they leave understanding that they have everything they need to move into the next phase of our collective transformation.
For sure. And to add to that, I think when you're in a place like that and you've, as you said, there's a lot of obstacles to get there, and we're all on a path. Some of us have found what that calling is, and it's so important to kind of go beyond the self, because we come into this world alone, but we're all in this together, and we can't be accept or be entrapped to the methods and the mechanisms of the past. Like, we have to collectively come together to make a change. And what I loved, and I'm curious about actually, is that in our space we had on one hand the physical Swiss Army taking over a base camp in this school that we're operating in, and then I found it just fascinating because you have like almost like the spiritual army, which is like everyone at House of Balance. And the kind of the underpinning of it is at this school. And I know that the headmaster, he kind of said like, it is a bit intense for obviously children to see like, the army with like all of their things. But in the energy and the essence of like what has, when you walk into sometimes a building or, a space, you feel like what's happened there in the past. And I'm so curious to see like how that will maybe somehow permeate in that school in particular. And I think it would be so cool for House of Balance to kind of maybe operate in spaces like where it's like future societies are being nurtured and grown. But that's just a side thought. And another question I wanted to ask you is, so talking about, of course, the future, what can we expect for next year? Like, what have been some of the observations, the reflections, of course, you mentioned more scaling with going to other conferences and things. But have you had time to think about next year and what you'd like to see more of?
Yes.
Yeah. So we are on a principle of self-organization where there are emergent collisions of life missions, we'll say, where people have come together and formed collaborative groups off of some of the sessions that we held at House of Balance. But what the initial intention was, as well, as to allow us to build a bridge towards our next evolution, whether it's a personal evolution or a corporate evolution. So House of Balance wants to serve as a provider of those bridges, as a provider of the blueprints that we all need to live into ourselves more fully. And I think it's an inevitability when we look at corporate trends and the dropout rates of employees and what they're truly seeking in life. You see that they're looking for workplaces where they can bring their whole self, where they can bring their heart, they can bring their passion, their prioritization of family and loving relationships and personal health and all of these topics of balance. We need to deprogram ourselves and break out of this cog in the wheel situation that we've created in many companies, where we allow people to show up as their full selves, knowing that their full selves are going to be far more professionally motivated than if they can only bring part of themselves to the table. So
it's an accelerator for personal, that's professional development. It's an accelerator for your sort of holistic transformation. So if you feel like incomplete or unfulfilled, you leave your work, right? The great resignation has been super disruptive for companies. Mm. It's affecting the global economy. And the pandemic created anxiety and a lot of isolation and a lot of separation. So I think this is all part of a much bigger narrative where there are moments when the world faces tremendous threats and people sort of self-organize themselves into clusters of change makers and doers and visionaries. You know, Margaret Mead said, you know, don't be surprised that a small group of committed people, you know, can change the world, because it's the only thing that ever has. I'm paraphrasing, but I think this is a small group of committed people, and we are capable of changing the world. We create a model in a time and a place that can grow and can offer a way for people to accelerate their personal and professional development. We'll find the solutions we need to tackle climate change and species extinction and, you know, digital disruptions and all these things. I'm sure of it.
If I can give some concrete examples of what's come out of this year, for example, there's a working group around creating educational programs, whether that is creating more inclusive corporate systems or creating better education for our children, creating systemic programs by which we can accelerate impactful ventures and impactful solutions for the SDGs. We have another working group that's working on land preservation, specifically in the indigenous forest areas, South America, but also globally. A policy change maker from New Zealand has recently joined as well, who's been very successful in doing that and sharing our successes and sharing our strategies around creating this change openly, without fear or without territorialism. We can do much more together. We have programs that help companies transition to sustainable manufacturing. There's even leadership symbiosis programs that we're providing as well, where we can teach leaders how to lead companies in the new era, where we're working in symbiosis with humanity, as we are as natural people, wanting to connect and wanting to live with passion and purpose, as well as in symbiosis with the planet. So already there are so many offerings and solutions that are coming forward from this year that we can provide to individuals or companies that are looking for their next step, their next evolution, and wanting a little guidance or wanting a tribe to do it with and wanting that support system. And that's just going to keep growing as we continue these conversations and continue the collaborations between events as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, it comes down to accountability, like you knowing who you, if you serve a company, who that is, what they stand for. It's not just a brain or like not brainwashing, but the greenwashing kind of things that get said are so easy to put on a marketing ploy, finding those tribes where you can it tangibly feel, even if you're there for an hour, you've walked away with so much knowledge and most importantly, a community that you can turn to find that. To find right. those answers and to find that information and to feel connected.
And to find the courage within yourself. Because in order to let go of the past and to let go of all of these cycles that no longer serve us, you need a little bit of courage to go into the unknown. Like some of the incremental steps that are taken are important, but are insufficient. We need radically accelerated, bold collective action. And that can only happen if you feel safe. And if you feel like you've got other people that got your back. So this is not an air, this is not a light touch kind of a moment. And we're not creating a light touch experience. We're creating a deep structural shift for the bold leaders that are committed and capable to shifting the course of humanity.
Absolutely. And it takes courage, as you say, because it's a huge undertaking. And I think what galvanizes a lot of that is that the people that are magnetized to this are operating at that same urgency. Mm-hmm. And that is so important because we know that we somehow have to leave this world in a better place. And we cannot just take a step back. Like every area, whether that's our family life, whether that's the company, whether it's the team, there has to be, you know, improvement and education of finding a better value chain. Yes. Because it's designed inherently sometimes wrong from the beginning. So you know, that's the thing, right? So I don't know if there's anything I haven't asked you that you want me to touch upon, but otherwise I think it's a really good place to kind of to end our conversation.
I think we could invite the audience to check out some of the other work that we're doing. Tiffany has launched Impact World as a way to sort of accelerate progress towards sustainable development goals, as well as Phoenix Acceleration Services to help startups really get on investment-ready track to really creating solutions and services that we need, right? And the capital that's required to scale that. And, you know, I've been leading Panetta Foundation, world-enabled as a global impact nonprofit that is really doing systemic change based on social justice and based on radical inclusion, but also with World Enabled, providing training programs for companies and organizations that look at inclusive innovation, right? Looking at innovation, I guess, not just deploying technology, but actually disrupting systems that are more effective, systems that have fewer barriers, and that allow people to sort of realize their potential. So all these things are fully aligned and sort of a beautiful ecosystem. And there's others. You know, there's sustainable brands, sustainable networks. There's a lot of sort of committed, value-aligned companies and initiatives in this consortium. And I encourage you to check it all out.
Amazing. Well, both of you guys are forces to be reckoned with, and definitely we'll put in the links as well of the places that you guys have mentioned, and you know, keep going with it. It's all very, very important. Important work. Thank you both so much for jumping on the Mission Makers podcast, and look forward to seeing you guys in real life again soon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Farah.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we've enjoyed having this conversation. If you want to grab a copy of today's show notes, then head over to missionmakers.com/Davos, where you'll also find notes from all of our previous episodes. If you're interested in talking to me about future opportunities at Davos, producing podcasts, or coming down to some of my music and motorsports events, then you can reach out to me at missionmakers or at dj.n1nja on Instagram and TikTok. Thank you as ever for listening. The music played in today's episode is an exclusive preview of my upcoming track with Deepak Chopra, which was titled Infinite Being at Davos, and it will be coming out later this year. So until next time, keep it laser focused.
We call ourselves human beings, not human thinkings, or not human doings, but human beings. So now as you're listening to me, if you would just try this, as you're listening to me, be aware of that which is listening. Except as a presence, period. So I has no form, and because it has no form, it has to be infinite. Anything that has form doesn't matter. The Milky Way galaxy has a border. The universe, even now, has a border. It's 47 billion light years away from us. But anything that doesn't have a border has to be infinite, which means I is infinite.